This is Alicia, and welcome to the College Life Podcast.
I am super passionate about education, personal development, growth, and bringing out the best in every college student. This podcast will help motivate you, empower you, and bring you clarity and confidence in who you are, in your purpose, and help you take action toward a life you love. Don't wait until you graduate to live your best life. Let's start now. Welcome to the College Life Podcast. It's Alicia here, and today I'm going to be interviewing Katie Oliveira. She is the founder of Collegehood LLC and host of the Collegehood Advice Podcast, which you definitely need to listen to. And she shares expert advice, strategies, and insights to help students succeed in college. She is passionate about all things related to loving your major and finding a path that actually matches who you are. So, Katie, tell us a little bit about yourself and your college journey.
Oh my gosh. So clearly my college experience has been like the most transformational linchpin experience of my life, because I'm still thinking and living, breathing it here almost 20 years later. So I am a first generation college student. My parents both, my mother graduated with a high school diploma. My father actually graduated with a GED. When he was in what would be ninth grade. And so they themselves didn't have higher education, but when I was a child, the idea that I would go on to higher education as like an opportunity to move myself out of sort of the lower working class was really a palpable thing. I excelled in high school and was a leader and in the top of my class and all those kinds of things. And so, you know, it was natural that I was going to go to college. Even there wasn't real pressure. My parents were really supportive of you being who you are. But the idea was like, just from the identity that I had sort of assumed as a teenager, the go-getter class leader, I was going to go to college. And so when I applied to college, you know, I was thinking of college, and I talked to my own students about this quite a bit, as sort of a finish line. I think sometimes when you're in the high school experience, you're like, all right, I got top 10% of my class. I did this on the SAT or ACT, president of the student council. I'm editor of the yearbook. I got this many AP classes. I applied to these colleges and I got in, and this college gave me money and this college gave me money, and that's it. I should be successful, right? And we focus as a culture, I think, so much on the admissions process. And I think we exhaust students on the journey to college. And so I think by the time many of them get there, they're like, this is the finish line, right? I'm just supposed to get to college, and now I pick the right major. And, you know, I go into the career that major leads to, and my life is set, and I'm going to have 2.5 children, a car, and a beautiful life, right? And I believe that too. When I got to college, I went to a Baylor University. I'm from Texas. I grew up in Houston. I currently live in Austin, but I went to college at Baylor University, which is a pretty prestigious university. I was pursuing pre-med. I was really excited to get in. My parents couldn't necessarily afford Baylor. As a first generation college student of working class parents, I had a lot of scholarships, and I took out a lot of student loans. I took out it was the late 90s where, you know, taking out a ton of student loans, more than a mortgage on a house, was sort of normal. So I regret that decision, but it was the norm at the time. Mm-hmm. And when I went there, you know, my parents sort of dropped me off in my dorm room and said, hey, good luck, and left me. And not because they're not supportive. They're tremendously supportive, but because it just, that's what they thought you did. And that's what I thought they needed to do. And it was sort of mutual agreement, like, just leave me here and I'll figure it out, guys. Okay. And I soon found very quickly in my first semester, I was so focused on trying to fit in because I didn't feel like I did. You know, most of the students I went to school with were kind of upper professional classes, upper class students whose parents had professional jobs and had gone to college, and who there was a legacy of college going. And I was one of the few kids I knew who was a first generation college student at the time, and who came from more of a working class environment. And so I was really focused on gathering approval of my peers. You know, I wanted to have a boyfriend, and I wanted to have lots of friends, and I wanted to go to the party, and I wanted to have a good time. And I didn't focus on what I really wanted to do academically, which was stupid because I was pre-med.
Oh, oops.
Oops. not the right major for me, but I was pre-med because in high school, I was told, you know, like, hey, you're good at biology. Now, no one ever told me I was good at math, which I wasn't my thing. But I was told I was good at science and I liked science because I liked trying to know how things worked. And so I went to Baylor, pretty competitive pre-med program, and was at the time focused on weeding you out, not keeping you in. Mm-hmm. Very rigorous. And so I was not up to the challenge and I did not fare well. And so I quickly became really disoriented about major and tried to start, you know, figure out my life. And so much of my college experience was spent sort of like hustling at the last minute and trying to figure out who I am and winging it. And so I had some really impactful experiences, but all in all, the whole thing was sort of a blur. You know, I did a lot of stupid things. So I got married in college at 21 and was promptly divorced by 25. I worked a lot of jobs. My dad actually lost his job while I was in college. And so I had to go to work. Mm. I didn't study. I was one of these kids who didn't have to study in high school and could get away with doing things at the last minute and not have good time management. And so I thought I could bring that into college with me and be fine because I'm naturally smart and smart people don't need to study, right? I did fair academically. I never was on academic probation or anything, but I did not reach my fullest potential during college. I would say I left, 90% of what college had to offer me on the table. And I thought when I graduated, like, man, I'm an anomaly. I really failed at this college thing. I just spent $100,000 in loans on what? Like a really great study abroad semester. That's what I spent it on, right? That was probably my biggest takeaway from college experience. And I thought that's interesting. I thought it was just me. And then I went, you know, I struggled in my 20s, my early 20s. Like my first job out of college was this god-awful job as a cocktail waitress at the Doubletree Hotel in the Galleria area of Houston. It was a nightmare. It's like you're wearing like a vest and short shorts and, you know, old guys are pinching you in the rear. Oh, and you're like, I just have a college degree. What in the, you know, what am I doing? And I flailed around a little bit, got jobs in a temp agency, still trying to figure out my life. And finally thought maybe I'd go to law school and worked at a law firm for a time, which gave me a lot of clarity. But I think that, you know, my takeaway is that I got a lot of really important skills from my college experience that I undervalued or misunderstood or took for granted at the time. And I also left a litany of really important experiences and connections on the table.
Mm. Oh, girl, you said so much good stuff in there.
I know. I didn't even cover it all. I was like, maybe I'm talking too long.
No. I mean, I loved it. I'm like taking notes because there's so much that I want to come back to. It's good.
There's more to talk about all in there.
Yeah. So I think, well, one of the things that I just wanted to ask you, it's kind of a quick question potentially, but did you actually identify as a first generation college student? Because whenever I went to college, I didn't really know. I didn't hear that term a lot. And so I felt like things were weird, but I didn't really have a name for it. And then I graduated and I started working with college students. And then all of a sudden I heard first generation and I was like, oh my gosh, that was me.
No, my experience was just what you said.
Okay.
Yeah. No, when I was there, I mean, I'm to reveal my age, I was in college in the late 90s, early 2000s. And mm-hmm. so at the time, no.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't a thing, but I knew. You know, I kind of looked to my left and looked to my right, and I was like, these people seem to know what they're doing.
Right. Something's off, right? It's
like, yeah, I'm in the dark on something and I don't know what it is. And everybody else seems to have this thing set up, you know?
Yeah. And it can so be easy. Sorry, go ahead.
You know, I realized really quickly that I was like, I was going to have to wing it, you know?
Yeah. And it can be so easy to look at somebody else and be like, well, they have it all figured out. What's wrong with me?
Well, you know, I think that was a lot now in retrospect, knowing what I know now as a human and also as a person who works really closely with college students, I can look at my 18-year-old self and be like, girl, you were searching for approval because you felt like a fish out of water. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I just thought that was normal behavior. I didn't realize what I was doing and I didn't, and no one else around me did. You know, my parents didn't realize that's what I was doing. You know, when I tell this story from this perspective, people who know me are shocked. This is not the perspective of my parents or my brother or my aunt or anybody who was championing me. Their perspective is like, whoa, that is our go-getter, top of her class girl going to a prestigious college and doing her thing. They weren't inside the experience, right? And so I have that dichotomy of like, oh, these people are putting all their hopes and dreams on me. And oh, I'm going to blow it because they think I'm an imposter. They think I can do more than I can. And I know that now, but at the time, no, I had no idea.
Oh, that's so real. Mm. And then you said something that I just feel like is so profound. And I think it's probably because I have felt the same way, but I think, you know, I personally didn't reach my fullest potential either in college. And it really drives my work today as well, because well, I think it's partly because I was first generation too, because I didn't know the resources were on campus or like, you know, how to do anything on campus. And even if you aren't first generation, you still are new in a completely new environment. You know, like how do we help students get to their fullest potential in college, or not fullest potential, but like start working towards that, right?
Yeah. You know, I think that, well, and this is where a lot of my work centers. So my mission as a person, once I kind of figured it out, I have landed on that my superpower in life is to help people figure out what it is they want to do with their life and then use the college experience to make it happen. And that second part, use the college experience to make it happen, is I see college as like this really big investment that is sort of straightforward if you know what you need to do and you like have the right resources and help to kind of teach you to navigate it. But for most of us, it's a bureaucracy. It's a system that has a culture, that has customs, that has systems that you kind of have to know how to navigate to access them. And that point of entry is a willingness to sort of be vulnerable, not know, and be willing to ask for help. And so for me, encouraging students to be able to have a beginner's mind when they enter the college experience and not look at it as an extended. So one of the analogies, kind of taken aside, one of the analogies I like to tell my students is, you mastered how to play checkers in high school, and someone has lied to you and made you think that this is like just high level checkers that you're playing in college. It's just like the same game, but it's like a harder opponent, but it's not high level checkers. You're playing chess. It's like a whole different game with all different stakes and a whole different strategy, but the board kind of looks like checkers and the pieces kind of look like checkers, but it's not really the same game. So you've kind of been seduced into thinking you have the skill set to be successful in checkers, but you really need to learn the game of chess. And so I think that, you know, that elaborate analogy is getting at this point of like, you have got to have, I think in any transitional moment in your life where you're interacting with this big system that you don't necessarily understand. So if that system's, you know, the legal system or buying a house or healthcare or getting a job, anything that you're entering into some kind of cultural system, you got to kind of be like, I'm the newbie and I'm going to have somebody show me the ropes.
Yes. Oh my gosh, this is so good. And I feel like that analogy is so awesome. I have not heard an analogy like that before when it comes to high school to college, because it is so true. Whenever you think it's the same thing, or it's at least similar, right? And it does look a little bit the same, right? Oh, you have teachers, you get to pick your classes, but it is not the same game. Mm-mm. That is so good.
Higher stakes, more complex strategy. And I think that one of the reasons I'm so passionate about figuring out what it is you'd like to experience or do or contribute in your life is because I think that's the linchpin, right? Like the whole reason you're in college is because you want to make a really good life for yourself, right? The end game is you want to get a secure job. You want to be able to provide for your family. You want to be able to do the cool things in your life that you want to do. So if you enter college and there's a disconnect between what it is you want to do and why it is you're there, then you are going to have a really hard time using college intentionally and strategically. And so what ends up happening is people are kind of entering college in the passive party mythology of years past. And so they're looking at it as like a rite of passage or a transition to adulthood. And it is those things on some extent, but at the end of the day, it's an incubator for you to get the skills, habits, behaviors, connections, mm-hmm. Experiences that you need to both figure out what it is you'd like to do and then get the qualifications and positioning for you to do that. And a lot of people don't enter the college experience with that positioning. They enter the college experience with kind of like a passive positioning of, well, if I pick just the right major, it will lead to just the right job that will kind of set me up for just the right secure life. And there's just more to it than that. That's an old antiquated system of college that I think is not necessarily true anymore. And I don't think that means the college is not worth it. College is absolutely worth it. Every bit of data about who comes out of college has a higher earning potential than those people who don't. But what it means is that the role that college plays in our personal development and working life is different than it was 30, 40 years ago. As our economy has shifted, the role of college has shifted, but the culture and mythology around the role of college has not.
That is so, so well put. And I love this concept that you talked about with like being passive, like you kind of just kind of expect things to happen. And, you know, do you think that that's partly because of high school? Because when you're in high school, that kind of does happen for you. Like things just kind of happen and you don't have to be super intentional about the way that you design your courses or what you, you know, I don't know.
Well, I think it's because, so I have a whole, I mean, this might take us off of the thing. I have a whole theory of why we kind of enter into a college experience this way. And I really think it starts before high school. I think it starts mm-hmm. the moment we ask a small child what they want to be when they grow up. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is a very innocent, well-meaning question that grownups ask children as a point of entry to engage with them, right? And I'm guilty of it. I've totally asked kids this.
Yeah, me too.
Right? I've totally asked kids this. And I've totally asked grownups this, like, what do you do? I do all of these things that we like scrutinize when we're having like a theoretical conversation. But I think that that question, if you think about it from a, I'm looking at it like as not a judgmental perspective, but like a, I'm a social scientist and my background is history and I teach history. So I'm looking at it like a social scientist perspective. My social scientist perspective like unpacks that question. And within it, I see a couple of flawed premises that we sort of subconsciously socialize. And this is just a theory I've been playing around with. And so the first is that your identity is tied to what you become when you grow up. What are you going to be mm-hmm. when you grow up? That's the first flawed premise. The second flawed premise is, what are you going to be? You're asking a five-year-old, so you assume that they have enough knowledge base to pick something.
Right.
Which assumes that like the knowledge base of a five-year-old or eight-year-old or 10-year-old or even 18-year-old is like what they know from like what they've been exposed to. And so they're just purely pulling something out of the air that they are thinking about, right? Like, mm-hmm. so they can pick like a doctor, lawyer, working man, fire truck. Like if I ask my kids what they want to be, my daughter says teacher because both her dad and I are both teachers. And my son says working man. And they know like six other things they could be, you know? So the second flawed premise is like you can think your way to it just based on your knowledge base. The third flawed premise is that you have one thing you can be. Mm. And the fourth flawed premise is that thing better be practical.
Yes.
Right? And I think that all four of them are sort of based in this concept that, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I think it starts there. And then, so we send them on that trajectory there. And to circle back to your question, and then in high school, we train them to tick off this list of tasks to get mm-hmm. to this finish line, to get to the ultimate goal of college. But we don't do a really great job as a culture, I think, of really thinking about the role of college in this particular part of history, in this particular moment. I think the reason for that might be there might be a myriad of reasons. I think on the one hand, there's a pretty widespread conversation about is college worth it? I think on the other hand, there's a lot of privilege that goes with entry into college. I think that the nature of college has shifted. And so I think it's all three of these things sort of culminating together to create a just flawed premise of what the whole thing's about in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And then students kind of go in under the framework or construct of that flawed premise. And then they are in a position where they're like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I suck. I'm flaky. I'm a loser, right? Like all of these like negative self-talk that they think is their own internal experience. And you guys, it's not your own internal experience. You are in within a structural context that's kind of set you up with little to go on. And that's why you're not sure. Right? It's not because you've failed in some way. It's because mm-hmm. the system has failed you in some way. But there are some things that you can do to remedy it, right?
Yeah. So tell us about what do you do with students who are exploring this, who are trying to figure out, you know, what is the right path for me? What's the right major for me?
So I think awareness of this, of these premises is step one. Mm-hmm. I think two, the realization. So I don't know if you've had, I'm assuming you've had this conversation with students, but I'm going to put it out there. I think anybody who's worked with students has probably had this conversation, but I have this conversation with students quite a bit and goes something like this. Hey, so do you know what you want to do with your life yet? Now notice, I want to point out, I don't ask, do you know what you want to major in? Because mm-hmm. I think what you major in is separate from what you do with your life. So that's one thing I want to put out there. And we can come back to that idea. But I say, like, what do you want to do with your life? And they say, and they look at me with their eyebrows raised and they say, do you want to know what I really want to do? Or do you want to know like what I'm doing?
Oh my gosh.
And I find that funny. And you know what? It is 9 times out of 10 that a student will tell me something like that. It's the one student who will be like, I'm going to do this and I'm passionate about it and I'm going for it. Mm-hmm. There's always sort of this construct where a student will have like what I call their like possible dream, like their dream, and they've put it on the shelf and they're pursuing their practical reality. Mm-hmm. So they've shelved their possible dream because it seems too unrealistic and they are pursuing their practical reality, which on paper, because of what they perceive of what they've seen on TV or what people have told them, seems like a more realistic, lucrative, secure path. And so there's a misalignment usually between those things. So I always start there to kind of figure out, is there a misalignment? You know, and there are kind of three, let me back up a little bit. There are kind of three places I see students starting. So students either start where they feel like they have no idea, they have many ideas of what they might like to do, or they have this dichotomy where they're like, have the shelved dream and then the practical reality. And so my first starting place is for students to start to give themselves the time and space to really investigate and brainstorm and think through what it is that you desire and really, really want. Not what it is you've been conditioned to pursue because it's what's responsible or practical.
I can't stop shaking my head. Keep going.
Right? So we start there. So like just to give you like a concrete example of something, like I have a program that I'm just going to launch called the Life Lab. And so like the first thing I have you do in there, I really think it starts like this. I think it's like two parts. I think part one is you have to get really clear on who you are. And then part two is you need to get clear, really clear on how who you are fits in a broader world of work, right? That's what it's about. But I think a lot of students are making these decisions with little to go on about who they are and little to go on about the broader world of work. They're basing it based on kind of like pigeonholed personas, and they're basing it based on like the 5 things they know and what their mom told them they should pursue because they can make money, right? Mm-hmm. And so the way I look at it is the first half is you have to get super clear on who you are. And so like some exercises I would run you through is I want you to follow your curiosity, you know, figure out what is it you're curious about? What do you geek out on? Like, what's that thing that you like are crazy obsessed with that nobody else knows? Like for me, I love butterflies. It's so weird, I know, but I'm like obsessed. If I like see a caterpillar, I like put it in a habitat and we watch it and I know them all. I know their host plants. It's like crazy. It's like this weird thing that if you didn't know me really well, now everybody knows it, but if you didn't know me really well, it's like this thing I geek out on that's kind of weird and quirky, makes me, right? What is that thing for you? What do you value? What is your why? What do you want to, and the way I think about your why is not like your passion or your purpose, because I think that those words are too broad and they kind of muck people up, but like, what do you care about? You know, do you want to make the world beautiful? Do you want to fix a problem? Do you want to contribute something? Do you want to make something? Like there's a lot of ways that we can contribute to the world. Mm-hmm. What's your default personality settings? What are your strengths? So really getting a student to kind of have a good sense of holistically who they are. And I think I meet a lot of students who don't have a good sense of that. They don't know who they are holistically. And not who your persona is, but who you are authentically. And I know that word's kind of overused, but I think that word's really important because I think young people kind of put on a persona to fit mm-hmm. in and to be accepted. And sometimes in this time of life is when we start to shed that persona. And so understanding those things is really important.
What do you think is the hardest thing for students to kind of do or process through whenever they're trying to figure this out? And again, just FYI, just a reminder, you don't really figure it out. Like, we're all kind of figuring it out. So it's not like a checkbox, right?
You know what? I was going to say that. Here's the thing. I think the struggle is not, I think people, so I don't think you don't know. All of these exercises are just extracting things you know about yourself. They're just tools to help you look at them objectively and know that that's like, put it on the table and examine it. Because you're exactly right. There is, I think the key here is that this is a lifelong process. This is a framework. Mm-hmm. You may in 10 years have to do this again because something is shifted and whatever you're doing and spending your time is no longer in alignment with you and you have to kind of sort through that. And so this isn't like a one and done kind of thing. This is living. And so having a real command of who you are empowers you to be able to pivot. And I think pivoting and flexibility, especially in the modern job market, is key. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the hardest part, is not the exercises to figure out who you are. I think that's the fun part. I think the hard part is recognizing that this is going to take a little bit of work and that it's not something that I can just give you a roadmap or shake my magic eight ball and tell you, you know, you should be a garbage man, right? You know, we want an assessment to tell us. One of the number one questions I get from students is, what assessment should I take to tell me what I want to be? And I use assessment, but I do not use assessment to tell you what you're going to be because nobody can tell you what you're going to mm-hmm. be. I can't tell you what you need to be. What I can tell you is a framework for you to discover for yourself what it is you want to contribute and experience and do with your time in a given season of your life. And that's a more complex answer, but it's an honest answer and it's the truth. And I think we want quick fixes and we want to be able to like take an exam that tells me, you know, I have this personality trait and I need to be a financial accountant. You know, I need to be a financial advisor or I need to be like this really distinct job. And the truth of the matter is that there are jobs that were once very secure and lucrative that are dissolving and there are jobs that don't even exist yet that you might create. And so I can't tell you what you're going to be when you grow up, but I can tell you that you're really curious about dinosaurs and you have a really good mind for remembering facts and you're a good writer. And hey, maybe you just have all the things you need to become a paleontologist. Let's test that theory, you know? And so that's the second phase is shifting from kind of understanding who you are to start to explore and figure out what's out there. Because to my point about what do you want to be when you grow up, I think that we have limited knowledge about what is even available to us. And so figuring mm-hmm. out what is even available to us and what that requires realistically, qualification and work and environment wise, culture wise. And if that's really what we want from our lifestyle. And so I think that's phase two is starting to unpack that. I recommend doing things like job surfing, job shadowing, informational interviewing, and then starting to kind of collect different experiences that are going to give you the skills and things you need to be qualified for it so that when opportunity knocks, you can answer. I think a lot of people don't pursue their dream. They go with their plan B that seems safe. And so when opportunity knocks, they're not ready because they haven't put in the work and effort to gain the positioning and qualifications to answer. And then that's the failure, I think.
Yeah, I see so many times students will kind of rule themselves out because they just don't even think that it's possible. You know, I had a student that I worked with, this was years ago, and I was like, I just asked her, like, what would be your dream job if you could do anything? Like, just for fun, you know, like, we're not like talking about your major right now. We're just talking about for fun. And, you know, she was like, I'd love to work at Kleinfeld's. Do you know what Kleinfeld's is?
I don't.
It's the bridal shop on Say Yes to the Dress. which is a TV show on TLC where people go, it's usually wealthy people will go and spend a lot of money on dress, on a bridesmaid's dress or a regular bride's dress. And it would be her dream scenario. And I was like, oh, that's super interesting. I wonder, you know, I just kind of was curious and was like, I wonder like what you would even need to get there. And we started talking through it and she ended up getting the courage to actually just email them and ask. And they offered her an internship that summer after her freshman year. And it was just so incredible because it was totally outside of her comfort zone. And we just started looking and I was like, oh my gosh, it looks like they have internships. You know, we just kind of like, we're kind of dreaming together. And a lot of times we just, again, rule those things out because we're like, that'll never happen. I'm going to probably do this. And then I'm going to do this. You know, we have this like laid out plan that doesn't even really excite us, but we're willing to like work on it and like work towards that. It really doesn't make any sense. But in our, like in the moment it does.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. That's remarkable. That's amazing. That's it. That right there is exactly what you need to do. I mean, here's the thing, right? You can pursue the boring path that's safe. So I hate to say that. I think sometimes we pursue good or okay at the risk of not getting great because we are so afraid of failure. But you know, I've said this on my podcast, so I apologize if you listen and you've heard me say this, but this is kind of like a point I like to bring up is that people who are in their early 20s and late teens, and even in their late 20s and early 30s, take many, many risks in their daily decision-making that are much more detrimental to their well-being than picking a major that you actually like. Or pursuing a dream job like, I want to work at that store. And I know it seems silly because it's on TV, so I can't possibly be available. But you know what? Some human has to work there, so it means it is possible, right? But being willing to take risks on texting while driving or having unhealthy sexual relationships or doing, you know, abusing drugs or alcohol, that's all risk-taking behavior that is okay for young people to do that is actually detrimental to you, who you are as a human. It can actually damage your health, your life, your legal standing, where like taking a risk on going for your like secret dream that seems silly is fun. And honestly, if you fail, okay, so you got to go get a real job. But if you don't fail, what? Your world just woke up like in a huge, amazing way, you know? And so, and even if you don't get the ultimate dream, you're at least in the trajectory of being close, of getting a close second, right? And I think that's curious. And I don't know what that's about, but when I point it out to people, they're like, oh my God, you're so right. And it's like, not because I'm a genius or anything, but I think sometimes what's close to us is less obvious than our brain is tricky. Like, I think it's probably got something to do with evolutionary psychology, right? There's something about our safety and security and being able to provide for ourselves in the long term that's like of kind of firing off in our brain. But the thing is, it's so easy to pivot and try something else. It's not a true risk. It's a perceived risk. I think part of it too, everybody who I talk to who's really shelving it has another component to it. And I think you've just brought it up when you're talking about dreaming. And the other component is they feel silly. They feel like they're afraid they're going to be judged by others and like try to be like coerced out of it. Or if they fail, then people are going to be like, she thought she was going to be, you know, she's going to be a National Geographic photographer. What did that girl think? Right. And you know what? But the thing is that I live by this philosophy that if people are talking about you and naysaying you, you're probably on the right track. Anytime someone starts judging me like that, I'm like, oh, I'm doing something. I'm going to keep going. And it's really freeing. It really has been my experience is that when you step out of the box and you start being you, you start making people uncomfortable, and it's not because you're doing something wrong. It's because you're doing something right.
Oh my gosh, that was so good.
It's just you are. And yes. It's you're making them nervous because you're going to make them have to do something right too. And they are too afraid to join you. So they want to judge you. And that's all it is. That's all it is.
Yeah. And I wanted to actually ask you a little bit more about this too. So you know, we do compare ourselves a lot to other people. And you know, I've had students in the past who have wanted to really go for it, but they're like, well, yeah, but my friend, she's doing that. And, you know, I don't want it to seem like we're competing or that, you know, I'm trying to take her dream, but it's really her dream. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Have you seen, you know, you kind of talked about how important it was for you to fit in and to have approval in your college experience. I definitely had similar, you know, experience as well. How do you think that that does impact students?
You know, I think we see this is that comparison phenomena that happens. I think it's amplified by social media. But yeah. I think, you know, you and I see this in the work we do in podcasting and online work, right? So when you're putting yourself out there online as an expert, and so in my case and in Alicia's case, we're both putting ourselves out in the world as podcasters helping college students thrive during college, right? And so on the surface, it appears that Alicia and I are competitors, right? We both have podcasts serving the same population, talking about kind of the same things. But in reality, we should be collaborators because Alicia and I are not the same people. Even if we are talking about the same topic, I'm going to bring a slightly different perspective to the topic than she is. And together, we're going to amplify our voices. We're going to amplify our work because we are not the same. And so just by virtue of you being a different human being, if you are really speaking through your voice, through your experience, through your knowledge base, and you're believing in that, so I think it's believing in yourself is the crux here, then don't compare yourself to people even who are in a like space, because you can both occupy that space. There's not lack. There's plenty of space in the world for me and Alicia. In fact, there probably needs to be a lot more people like me and Alicia having this conversation. But we could perceive like, ooh, there's somebody else competing with me. Or we could perceive like, oh my gosh, thank goodness there's somebody else doing this work. I choose to look at it that way. And I think that I choose to tell my students to look at it that way too. And I think that's novel because we are conditioned in our culture to compete. And we're a very competitive culture. And so I think sometimes collaboration and healthy competition, like competition where you're both lifting, the rising tide lifts all boats, where we're both kind of raising and growing each other, but we're still competing, I think is overshadowed. It's like, you know, a zero-sum game. It doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. It can be that we both occupy the space and serve other people that we resonate with or grow and talk off of one another. And I think that's true in every single space, in every single circumstance, in every single industry. And you know what? If you have a friend who like wants to do a similar dream than you, then circle up your resources and help each other, because it is a hard world out there. And you got to research and talk to people and learn. And I think having a buddy who's kind of doing the same thing is so helpful in a lot of ways as a support system.
Yes, could not have said it better myself. That's awesome. Thank you so much. Is there anything else that you wanted to share? Just kind of about the work that you do or anything that you feel like, you know, students really need to hear right now?
Man, we've covered so much really good information. I think for me, if you are at all, even in like the very back of your mind, let me take that again. So I have an exercise that I recommend every student do, and it's going to be super simple and you're going to be like, oh, I probably already done this, but I recommend it. If you have any inkling that your major may not be for you or that your trajectory may not be for you, I recommend you do the next exercise. So go to your university's catalog and look at, or online on the academics page is probably where you can find it now, and look at every major, every minor, every certificate that the university offers at your school. And then eliminate every single thing that like you have a initial emotional response to that's negative. So like the hair on the back of your neck stands up, your gut turns, you're like, oh, 5-year-olds, I never want to teach them, right? Like those things that you just repulse you, like you know they're not for you. And then look at what you have left and start to think through why they're still left. What is it about that thing? Are you curious about it? Are you, did somebody tell you that's a good option? Do you just need more information? And kind of really look at them and start to sort of follow your curiosity, right? So think through like, have I taken a class on this? How did that go? Is there a professor I can talk to? Do I know anybody who majors in this where I can find out more information about it? And have an open mind about what the possibilities are. Because the thing is that your major doesn't equal your job and your job doesn't equal you. Your major is one part of a degree plan, and your job is one part of your life that you spend your time doing and that funds you to pay your bills and do fun things in your life. And you are so much more than those two things. They're just one dimension of who you are. And so they should be something that really inspires you and that you're curious about. And one major can lead to a multitude of roles and jobs. And so going with one that is left on the list because you find it interesting and you're curious about it, rather than getting into your logical brain and leaving it on the list because you feel like it's what you should do, is very, very important, because you can get a myriad of jobs with one major, but that major, you know, that's what you're going to be spending your time in. That's where you're going to be learning. That's where you're going to get your transferable skills and connect with other people. And you're going to be kind of steeping yourself in a certain kind of thinking and kind of culture. And what I have noticed is that students who do this, students who major in something because they're curious about it, naturally engage in the college experience in a deeper way. They are naturally more motivated. Their academic performance is naturally higher. And they kind of get on this groove, so to speak. I think of it as like they get on a fast track through the college experience, where they start to like collect mentors and internships and cool experiences. And so I'll give you a concrete example. So I had this student, she was a business major. She hated it. Her parents were making her be business. And every time I talked to her, the class she loved the most was her art elective, her art gen ed. And I was like, did you do art in high school? And she's like, yes, I love art, but my parents are making me major in business. And I was like, why don't you take an art class and see how you feel about it? So she did, and she loved it. And she was really tortured about moving over to her art major because her parents were not supportive of it, because they feared she wouldn't get a job after she graduated. But she was failing in business. She was failing her business classes. She was miserable. Her time management was terrible. She was skipping class. She was really down. She was anxious and kind of depressed because she just was not feeling it. She was thinking about going home because she couldn't understand if it was worth it. It was costing her a lot of money for something she didn't really like. And I encouraged her to go talk to an art professor and shift her major over to art, or at least do a minor. And so she did baby steps. She switched over to a minor. She loved it. And then she slowly switched over to a major and she loved it. And everything turned around for her. She had friends suddenly. She had a hard time making friends in business classes. Suddenly she has friends. She's like founded an organization for artists on our campus. She's holding galleries. Her grades have improved. Her time management has improved. Her confidence has improved. Her energy has improved because she got on her track. She got where she needed to be. She started to follow her curiosity and things fell into place. And so the thing that I encourage you to do is, if you are not quite sure, give yourself the space to figure it out and follow it. Follow it. Go there. That's where you'll find your people. That's where you'll find your inspiration. And that's probably where you'll thrive and be successful. It's possible to be successful in any major. The difference between success and not success is not what you major in or what you do for work. It's what you do with it. You have to do something with it. And you're more likely to do something amazing if you are in something that aligns with you.
And we are going to leave it right there. I want you to share. I know that people are going to want to connect with you. So where can people connect with you?
So the very best way to connect with me is to head over to collegeheadadvice.com and join my email list. When you join the email list, you get access to a free resource library, and you will get monthly notes from me to help you with college. You can also connect with me over on Instagram at Collegehood Advice. That's my favorite social media platform. And you can also DM me questions if you want to connect that way.
Awesome. And also don't forget to listen to her podcast. I'm going to link all of those things that she mentioned in the show notes so you can have easy access to them as well. So thank you so much, Katie. You are amazing. And we will be working together in the future, so you will hear more from her as well, no matter what. So can't wait to have you back on too.
Thank you, Alicia. I had such a great time. And I'm really inspired by the work you're doing. And I appreciate you having me on your show.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the College Life Podcast. I hope that you enjoyed this interview with Katie from College Hit Advice. She is awesome, and it's just been really fun to connect with her. There's a couple things that I really, really want you to take away from this episode. The first thing is, this is going to be a lifelong process. Just because you pick a major doesn't mean that it's going to be what you do for the rest of your life. I know that that can be really scary, but I also hope that it's kind of exciting for you. Also, I just want to remind you that your major doesn't equal your job, and your job does not equal you. This was a quote that Katie said during the interview, and I really resonated with that. And you definitely want to be exploring. Explore as much as possible while you are in college, and just pursue something that you are curious about, that you are interested in, and you are going to enjoy college more, and I think you're also going to enjoy your life more. I hope that this episode was helpful for you. Please make sure that you connect with Katie. I have linked her podcast, her Instagram account, and her website all in the show notes. So make sure that you check her out. And thank you so much for listening. As always, I really appreciate you all. I hope that you are enjoying your summer if you are off already. And make sure that you subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. And I will catch you in the next one. I hope that you have an excellent week.